our headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa, to the rest of Africa, this is CII Radio Live.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to Bumper to Bumper. My name is Ziad Plachis, and with me in studio is Brother Jamil Ismail. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Jamil. How are you this evening?
Wa alaikum salam, Ziad. I'm doing very well, thanks. How are you?
Alhamdulillah.
That's very good. Ziad, tell me something. How is the traffic on your way here?
It's Joburg. It's December.
It's quiet, right?
I love December. To stay in Joburg,
right?
Because there's no traffic. Everybody goes out to the coast and yes. everywhere where there's more traffic. Like if you go down to Cape Town now, you're gonna get traffic.
Yeah.
If you go down to KZN, you're gonna get traffic.
Look, if you're lucky enough to be able to work through the holiday period, there's just so much of value in doing that.
Yeah.
Because anyway, holiday accommodation prices are literally doubled. If you are able to, say, travel off-peak or whatever, that's amazing. I think we've discussed this, that everything is firstly cheaper and actually usable. You know, you go to a place, even like, you know, if you're in KZN and you go over a weekend to like a restaurant, you wait forever for your food. And like, obviously the chefs and whoever are like under pressure because there's so many people and it's just like so rushed that it's again, you're just not getting value for your money.
Yeah. No, definitely. I mean, like you're saying, you're paying like double or even triple the price for accommodation. Then you go to, like you said, you're what, Wet n Wild at Rushaka.
Yeah.
And then
you stand in a line for literally half an hour to go down a slide that takes 8 seconds.
Yeah.
And it's like a rinse and repeat, you know. But like, I mean, you don't get any value out of something that, or you're trying to look at some fish from 3 rows back. Like it doesn't make any sense, you know.
No, and it's not only that. I mean, there's like everywhere, there's no way that you can actually say, you know, go to Sun City, it's going to be quiet there. Go to, there's just like.
So let me ask you something, right? You have one kid.
Yeah.
Isa is how old?
He's nine.
Yeah. When you looking for a holiday destination within South Africa, what do you look for? Is it like a beach stay? Is it like, you want him to like learn something, or you want to.
Because he's homeschooled, if he can learn, like, within the trip. You know, like you go on a safari and he sees the animals. Cow.
He's okay, nine.
Not the
three. Besides the safari, you're using a cow. You're lying to him.
No, but it depends, really. We had this almost like, not tradition, but we used to make sure that every year in July holidays, we went to Drakensberg.
Okay.
Right? So we go to Drakensberg and then straight after that, we go down to Durban.
Okay. That's actually a nice way to break down the trip. Not that you need a break to Durban, but it's not a very, you know, exciting drive, number one. I mean, you got Van Rienens, but apart from that, it's not an exciting drive. And people don't realize this, but along the way, there's a lot of places to stop. Like, I think it's, is it Midlands?
Midlands, Nottingham Road. We
yes.
actually stayed there the one time. We stayed at a nice place called Spring Home. Actually,
okay.
Check it out.
Okay.
It's like a self-catering. It's like a house.
Okay.
And it's got this lake in front and whatever. And I think you can sleep up to like 8 people or something in there. It was
okay.
like an actual house. You have like a separate entrance for the upstairs.
Yeah.
So you can have your family and then somebody else can have their family upstairs or whatever it is.
Right. So it's like a guest house.
It's a self-catering house. It's like almost like an estate. It looks like an estate.
Mm.
You know, like these country estates.
Yes, yes.
So there's a few houses, like I think about 6 of them. And then you can stay there. And then just down the road from there, so it's part of, I forgot the name now. But they also have like a resort there. So they've got like a massage place and a restaurant and Brahmin Hills.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So let me ask you something, right? Do you have a standout story when it comes to a holiday with a vehicle? Like something standout that happened, something that regarding a vehicle? Didn't you have an incident with a Land Rover?
Oh, yes, I did.
Yeah?
So we took the Land Rover Defender 110, the new shape when it came out, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, 2020, 2021.
Okay.
We took it down to the Eastern Cape. So what we did was, we actually didn't plan it. we received the car, and City Lodge wanted us, they always want us to basically review their places around the country.
Okay.
So we said, you know, is there anything, you know, that you want us to come and see? And it was COVID. So, you know, the people were not getting out, and they obviously needed, you know, like exposure and whatever. So we said, we're going to go down to, it had just changed to Maybecha.
Whatever.
Port Elizabeth, right. Basically. So I have family there, so it was like a family trip. Okay. Work, holiday, whatever you call it.
Yeah.
And we're obviously reviewing this vehicle. And we were going to take it from PE through the Karoo and come back. So we did like a whole roundabout.
Wow. So, okay, so that's actually a nice way to test the Defender.
Yes,
I mean, yeah.
It was very nice. So we had like the urban city and we went off-road through the Karoo. And we stayed in the Karoo as well.
Okay.
Yeah. So what had happened was, I think we left the Friday, we got the vehicle like Thursday afternoon or something, and then the Friday morning we said we'll leave.
Okay.
And we went, and we read Juma, I can't remember, somewhere along the way, and we stopped in, what's this place called? So the sea. I can't think of the name now.
Where is it?
It's on the way to Port Elizabeth. It's a small little town.
The only thing we're going to see, I'm thinking, is Carolina. I don't know.
No, I can't think of the name now. Okay. On the tip of my tongue. But anyway, so we stopped there for the night, and then we got to PE the next day. And we tested the car. Everything was fine. And then we were in PE. It was Saturday night. And I had opened the sunroof, right? It's this new Defender 110. Everything is new in there because, I mean, we know the Defender 110. It was like the Defender 110. There was no tech in it,
yes.
to put it mildly.
Yeah.
And now you've got this whole screen and you've got all these electronics, and now you've got a panoramic sunroof in this Defender 110. So we said, you know, let's try this thing out. It's a nice night. And we opened the sunroof, and it wouldn't close. Yeah.
Okay.
But that was fine, you know, until it decided to start raining.
No.
Now we in the middle of, not in the middle of nowhere, we're in PE.
Right.
But now.
So did you park it like a filling station or something?
No. So what had happened was, we actually went to go visit family at the time.
Okay.
And we were leaving them. And, you know, like, we opened this to, you know. And now we, like, I start panicking. And it was the first time that I ever used that SOS button. You know, you always see it in the vehicles. The Volvo's got it. The BMW Mercedes. Everybody has it now. So I dialed this thing. Got through to them, and I said to them.
Is it like a international call center?
No. Okay. It's local. So I think there is a SIM card built into the vehicle,
right.
If I'm not mistaken, because that's how you get your GPS, right. I mean your GPS, your navigation.
Yeah.
So it dials a number, like a 087 number or something.
Okay.
And there's like obviously operators, like 24-hour roadside assistance or whatever. So now it's a Saturday night. It's like 8:30, 9 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
And I tried everything, like opening the car, locking the car, pressing the button, whatever you could think of.
Did you try disconnecting the battery?
No.
Okay.
I mean, like, I'm not going to, it's not my car.
Okay.
I'm talking about.
I'm just saying I would have done that. Like, I would have tried.
Okay. So anyway, so I called them. Quite quick, quite good response. So that was part of my review. That, you know, like, you know?
No, but you know what? It's funny that you mentioned that, because I think that's honestly the type of review that like people want to see. You know, you buy a vehicle. What's the price of a 110 now?
So at that time, I know it was just over 1 million. Okay, I think now it's about 1.3.
So you buy a vehicle for 1.3 million. A lot of times we don't see what happens if something goes wrong.
Yeah.
And I mean, like what you're saying, it's not something that any vehicle is you know, call it immune to. It could happen to any vehicle, but how the company deals with it and how it's managed makes a world of difference. So yeah. You say, firstly, it didn't take a long time. If that was your vehicle, firstly, you'd be stressing because you're on holiday.
Exactly.
Secondly, you feel like I just bought this vehicle. Like, what's going on? Like, yeah. So you panicked and whatever. So obviously, first thing was good. So they didn't take a long time. So did they send someone out to you? So
basically, they said to me, they can't actually fix the vehicle because they would have to obviously test it. So it needs to come into a dealership. I would need to then go into the dealership on Monday,
right.
In PE,
okay.
And they would be able to test the car. The problem was that we were leaving Monday morning to go to the Karoo.
Right. And you don't want to drive that distance with your panoramic roof open.
Yeah. So, I mean, they were helpful, but, you know, like, firstly, we were staying at the Courtyard Hotel in PE. They don't have undercover parking. Mm. So that was the first thing. It's raining now, and, I mean, so my family actually gave us a bin bag and some tape, you know, like just to make sure that the... Because, I mean, it's leather seats. You don't want it to get, like, you know, it's brand new car.
Yeah.
So we said, okay, it's fine. You know, we'll have to see. We're just going to have to leave late.
Treated a Defender one, then a brand new Defender one, then like a Venture.
Basically.
You taped it up.
No, we didn't.
Oh.
So after I got off the call, I then phoned the fleet manager and I said, you know, this is a problem. Whatever, and they were also very helpful. They said, don't worry. You know, like, you can take it to the dealership. They'll sort it out, whatever the case is. You know, don't stress. It was fine. I got off the phone. I tried again. And by some miracle, alhamdulillah, the thing closed.
Are you serious?
We didn't open it.
You didn't even open the windows after.
Okay, no, we opened the windows. But we didn't touch that panoramic sunroof from the time we left PE to the time they took the car back.
So did they find out what the fault was, or was it just, I don't know?
So, not to, like, badmouth Land Rover and Jaguar Land Rover, because their cars are quality. But at that time, like 2019, 2020, they were having a lot of tech problems.
Mm.
There was, because I know we even had, I think it was a Velar, and the screen kept on going off. The infotainment screen. Like, just goes
blank. Look, I know there was, like, a massive shortage of chips at that point. There was, like, and I'm guessing it would, like, funnel down into other components. And then, obviously, if you're used to getting it from the first place, if they don't have stock, you're going to get it from the second, because you still need to get vehicles out.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess maybe that's where a lot of it came from.
I don't know what the problem was, but there was, like, a lot of people that were complaining that, you know, they said they bought this brand new Jaguar Land Rover and they had these problems, like a window wouldn't open, like the same panoramic sunroof. So it was an electrical problem. And I think also they were going through a stage where they wanted more tech, but maybe they weren't at that stage yet. I don't know if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Because, I mean, like, the Defender 110, for example, went straight from what we knew as a Defender 110, and then they just dumped a whole lot of tech in it.
Sure.
So, you know, there could be some shortcomings. I'm not, like, what's the word? Like, condoning, or, you know, like, saying that, you know, it was okay that what happened. Because, I mean, you're buying a million-rand car, you should be getting, you know, everything worth it. But, I mean, those things happen.
Yeah, yeah. So is that like, call it the only story you have regarding a vehicle? Or is it something, like, memorable? Holiday vehicle?
Well, that's in terms of a vehicle. In terms of a trip, the one time Nabia and I, my wife, we went down to KZN. So we left on a Friday and we were doing work along the way. And we stopped in Nkandla, Newcastle, all, you know, like along the way. And we ended up in Durban. Right. And then we had to come back because this was from Friday to Sunday, call it Sunday evening.
Right.
And we literally hadn't slept that whole weekend because we were like on our feet. We were busy the whole time.
Okay.
And we were driving back to Johannesburg. And we were probably about an hour. I don't know if you know. I think it's a total or engine, just about an hour, 45 minutes outside of Joburg.
I think it's a total.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we just couldn't make it. Like, we literally were so, so tired.
Mm.
We stopped there and we were throwing water on each other's faces just to stay awake. And we had to get home because we had work the next morning.
Okay. What car were you guys driving?
So, Nabia had a Corsa Light at that time. You know, the 992?
Yes.
What? 922.
922, yeah.
Yeah, that Corsa Light. It was right. Corsa Light Sport.
Right, right.
But caused a lot of problems.
Okay.
Was that Corsa?
Really?
We had endless amount of problems with that car. We, like, if I tell you, you wouldn't actually believe. Like, I had to, like, two of the things that I can clearly remember was, one was every time, like, the car would just stop, right? And then I had to get out, open the bonnet, put the spark plug in because the spark plug kept on jumping out.
What?
Seriously, spark plug. Yeah.
So look, based on that cars and those type of cars, in 2000, my mother bought a brand new Toyota Etios. She used it for, I think it was like 16 or 17 years. If I tell you, aside from like services, tires, you know, the usual stuff, nothing was ever changed on that vehicle. And my auntie, I learned how to drive on it. My auntie, so it was like, it was a vehicle that was used, you know. And eventually it got taken away because it got written off, but because of an accident.
Mm.
But up until the day when it was, like, it drove like nothing. Like, I think at one stage, we had installed like a alarm immobilizer thing, or you know those NTI.
Yeah.
Do you remember those ones that used to make a sound and it had like a hidden button somewhere?
Yeah.
You used to press it, right?
You can put it behind the steering wheel.
Yeah. They used to put it like weird. It's like, you know, on in that, you know, the, what's this, on the gear lever, on the booth or whatever.
Yeah, or by near the fuse box.
Yes. So it used to be like always like weird places. And what happened was when the guy who installed it put this in the alarm system in, he actually messed up something with the starter.
Oh.
So the vehicle never used to start, so he had to kick start it.
Oh.
That simple.
Yeah.
And if I'm not mistaken, I think to get a new starter was like $300 or $400.
Sure.
So it was honestly, I don't think we'd ever have those type of cars in today's day and age. Like, they just last.
Uh-huh.
I think vehicles today are kind of made with an expiry date. For example, if you look at VWs, I think 100,000 kilometers is the sweet spot. Like, that's when you get rid of your
VW. I don't even think that's even, I mean, like, we got rid of our Vivo and it was like 45,000 or something, and we had already had problems with it.
Serious?
Yeah.
Okay. So I had a Vivo as well, and from very, like, very early into ownership. So when I bought the car, I think it was under 3,000 Ks. I think it was like 2,000. So it was like almost brand new. But very shortly after, there was like a sound coming from the left wheel. Like every time you make a U-turn, or, you know, you're like reversing, but your wheel is locked.
Mm.
And if I tell you the amount of money I spent, because VW said it's not under the warranty, and the amount of money I spent on trying to get this almost brand new car to just stop making that sound, because it became so bad that my father used to say, Jamil, this wheel is going to like snap off or something, like, sort it out. And we literally replaced like the entire suspension, like all the components. We replaced, I think it was a steering rack. Like, it was just like And a lot of mechanics work with like a trial and error thing. Mm. It's like, this is definitely the steering rack. Let me sort this out and, you know, fetch your car in 2 days' time. And you come there and it's still making the sound. It's like, it's not the steering rack. I think it's now the control arm bushes. And like, you know, they're just like, it's an expensive error of, elimination process. It's a pricey one, you know. And I can't even explain to you how much of money I spent on that vehicle. And I got to a point where it went away. The sound went away. I think I replaced hubs and bearings or something, and that's what took it away. And at about, I think, 50,000 Ks, it just came back like as if it never ever left, like straight up there. Yeah. And I was like, no, man, this is not like, you know, I mean, everyone looks at, like, you know, certain vehicles like a Vivo and they just assume it's like a very cheap runaround. Mm. And, you know, it looks nice. I think from like the budget vehicles and stuff, it definitely looks nice. But I don't think you really save money because your insurance is so high on a vehicle like that. And then if you're dealing with like this sort of maintenance and this sort of like quality problems, you know, it becomes a pricey vehicle to own.
But even Polo sedan that we had,
right?
We bought it. It was supposedly brand new, and there was just like this wheel, also like a knocking noise, and it would just get louder and louder and louder. And we took it back to them, and then they just couldn't find out what the problem was.
So that's what frustrates me, because even at that, I took it to a VW dealership, and I said, "Look, you guys are going to charge me whatever it is, but find out what the problem is." And again, like you say, we just don't know what it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, I mean, it's a Vivo. It's not like complicated or, you know.
So I eventually told them to take the car back.
Right.
Because it was still within the 3 months.
Yes, yes.
So that was our saving grace. Did you know that it was still under warranty? We still had that Consumer Protection Act and whatever it is. But I mean, the Vivo.
So did they take it back?
They took it back.
Okay.
And they gave us a brand new car.
Okay, nice.
But I mean, with the Vivo, that was now 40,000, 45,000. And
yeah, so my uncle actually bought a Golf 5 GTI brand new, and I promise you, I think it was at 102,000 kilometers. You know, the warranty is until 100. I can't remember if it was like turbo valves or something, but it literally caused the entire engine to seize. Sure. Like, he had to do like replace the engine on a Golf 5 GTI at 102,000 Ks. It's crazy, you know. Like, I mean, you don't look at things like this.
No, and they're like very strict. Huh? Like,
but that actually brings me to a point where, like, you know, if you're looking at the second-hand car market, a lot of people just say, let's buy a brand new vehicle so that we don't have any of these issues. But I know a lot of people who buy a brand new vehicle and have issues with their vehicle where, you know, it's not clear cut. Like, you know, it's because it's brand new, it's just gonna be there, or it's just going to be in 100% working condition. There's a lot of like recalls. There's a lot of times you have to take your vehicle back and be like, I'm not happy with this, or there's a certain sound coming, or you know, the vehicle, whatever it is.
There was a scandal a few years ago. I don't know if you can remember. I'm not going to name the brand.
Okay.
You might know who I'm talking about. But the car was delivered and there was a rust underneath. It was brand new.
Okay.
And the dealer was like, you know, like it's you know, you were driving the car or whatever, and the consumer was like, no, the car came like this, it had rust. I can't remember what exactly happened, but I mean, that was a brand new car and it had rust underneath.
Look, I won't lie to you, a lot of times with brand new cars, dealerships and OEMs try and clean up the act very quickly, so they'll try and limit their damages, but they'll also try and like as effectively keep it quiet and sort out your problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's an absolute PR nightmare if you got a brand new vehicle, and especially if you have more than one person that comes up. Like, I mean, think about it. If you're looking to buy a vehicle, just for argument's sake, you know, vehicle A, and you see there's like a certain problem with the vehicle that keeps on like recurring, or you even see two or three people who mention the same problem, you chances are you're not gonna even consider that vehicle, you know. People work like really hard for their money, so it's not a case of, oh, let's just give it a shot and let's try. Like, I think people do a lot of research now. People are like very thorough. And I notice this also, like, I know like a lot of people ask you like advice when buying a vehicle. Before it was like very vague, you know. Now people literally come to you and be like, look, I'm looking at this vehicle and this vehicle. Between these two, you know, which one would you say? And then you give them like, you know, I think this one. And you're like, but why? Like, you know, and even the like the depth of the questions that people ask you, it's like, you know, I noticed this one has this feature. Why would you choose this one or which? It's really, you can see people are really protecting the purchases now.
No, people are definitely doing their homework, and it's because we have access to a lot of information now. Before, you basically took the salesman or sales, whatever you want to call them, at the dealer, you took their word for it, and whatever you read in the newspaper, that was it. Now you've got so many people reviewing cars online.
But also, can I just tell you, right? And this is one of those topics that are, you know, it's a touchy sort of conversation and a topic. But I feel a lot of journalists are actually just extensions of companies' marketers. Because, I mean, for everyone to continue doing their job, the circle needs to be completed. And to explain to listeners how the circle works is, we don't get paid to review a car, but you also need that car to complete the cycle, you know. For example, if we're not driving test vehicles, myself and Zab, we wouldn't be able to sit on air on the station and on the radio on bumper to bumper and talk about a vehicle. We haven't driven it. We couldn't formulate our opinion. But also, if I come out and I say, you know what, there's this vehicle that I drove, and you know what, I didn't like A, B, C about it. Like, I mean, I think for both of us, we try and be as fair as possible and honest as possible. But there's certain vehicles where I'll rather just not say anything because I know I'll never get another vehicle again. You know, I don't know if it's like one of the challenges for you as well. But I think PR companies or PR people look at where they're going to get their bread buttered. And they literally, you know, I'm not lying, and I'm not saying this, you know, to be, you know, like make this an issue. But if you look at some of the reviews, they're so one-sided. If you look at what they concentrate on, and you think to yourself, there's a 3-minute video on something that makes no sense. Absolutely no sense. You know, it's like, it's more on the entertaining side. And, you know, I mean, I don't know. Do people find that like valuable information?
Well, you know, you actually say that, and it's funny because during the week, I actually got a comment on one of my videos. Now, we do what's called a first look video, and we do a review. So the first look is, it's a silent movie. We don't talk. I just basically go around the vehicle inside and out, show the vehicle. So it's like about a, let's call it like 5 minutes, right? Our reviews are quite lengthy, like 20 to 30 minutes, because we have like a discussion like how you and I are having. Okay. Issa and I will go through everything about the car. Issa is my son. So in the first look video, somebody actually commented and said they actually thought it was a review, because some people think that the first look is a review for some or other reason.
Okay.
But this guy actually commented and said, this is the best review I've seen of, I think it was a Renault Kwid or something. Because you don't say anything. There's guys that come on and read a 20-page script, and they just talk nonsense.
Yeah.
And they don't actually show anything of the car. It's more about them, and, you know.
So I think we kind of, we slept with this very weird dilemma because, as a journalist, right, you have this duty to report on something, right? And as a reviewer, it's the same thing. But then you've got a very separate side of this coin where it's a content creator. So, you know, we always joke and say that we're kind of hybrids, you know, where we fall between the two. But if you notice, like for me, I'd look at content creation saying like, show like really nice pictures of the car, show the nice angle, show like nice video, you know, like drone shots driving in a mountain, etc., etc. But where you take like absolutely useless like feature of the vehicle and you make that the be all and end all of a video, like I don't understand, like, do people see that as value? Like, when you're looking for a vehicle, right, you go onto whatever, let's say YouTube, because you want to see like reviews and see what the vehicle is about. And then you have this like the most ridiculous video where you've got 3 minutes of someone talking about the 360 different colors that you can change the ambient lighting to. I mean, that's literally, I just said everything that he said in 10 seconds.
Yeah, you see, I think also it depends on the audience. You see, we are looking at, like you say, a hybrid audience. And what like we try to do, especially with our content on iloveza.com and Let's Talk, is that we try and get content for everybody. So like I said, we have a first look. So people that want to just see the car, they don't want to hear us talking, they don't want to know any information. They just, you know, they purely want to see what the car looks like before they do more research. That's the first look. Then if there's somebody that actually wants to know how the car drives and whatever it is, that's the video review. But then we have the article as well on the website that's more in-depth. So I would say the review on YouTube is more like a first impression.
Sure.
You know, of, you know, like how we felt about the car, but it's not the in-depth review, because you can't really do an in-depth review.
So let me tell you, right, just on that note, firstly, I'm not discrediting any of them, because if you look at the production value that goes into like their videos and their scripts and that, it's amazing, right? I just don't think they should be falling under a review, if that makes sense. So if you look at us, right, I think we somewhat have a similar background in terms of the reviews and stuff. And it's a lot of hard work. So a lot of times, I think both of us would try and couple something. So for example, we're doing a review on a vehicle, but we're also doing a review on a accommodation place. And you know, it to someone looking from the outside, it's like, this is so amazing. But I always try and like go past the you know, the surface level of whatever's happening. And you take this vehicle and now you get there and, you know, you've just driven for a distance. And when you are reviewing a vehicle, you don't drive like the way other people would drive. You're like looking out for all these little things, you know, how the vehicle feels, the fuel consumption. It's the calculations that you like, you know, kind of plotting in your mind, working out the cost. Okay, you know what? I filled this much of fuel. This is how many kilometers I did, this is the distance, divide by this, times this, like, you know, to get to all these sort of figures. And for me, for example, I'd start to write my article that night, talk about the vehicle. The very next day, I'm now talking about this accommodation place. So it's definitely hard work. It's not taking anything from them. But I just don't feel like, you know, it's a review as such. And when I look at something like a review or like a buyer's guide, someone's going to be spending their money. Like, there's a duty towards that person, you know, where you need to give them informative things. You can't be scared that you're not going to get another vehicle or you're not going to get paid or whatever it is.
But you see, like you said, it's an actual arm of the marketing or PR. So that's what they see it as well, is that it's just an extra arm and they just like closing the gap, like you
but
said.
They're
marketing the vehicle. They're not actually reviewing it.
Exactly.
You see, we're reviewing it in the sense that we're seeing how it fits within your lifestyle, how it's going to fit within somebody else's lifestyle, because we make it relatable.
Yes.
You're not just going to say, oh, wow, this car was so nice, you know. No, you know, it's practical. You're going to get 5 suitcases in it. It's going to give you a consumption of 5 liters or whatever.
I think for me personally, you know, it's like balancing it with your love for motoring and cars. So, for example, we were speaking about last week, we were speaking about the Jeep Gladiator. And I just feel like it's aimed at a different market. And for that market, it's the most perfect vehicle. I mean, it's not trying to be the cheapest bucky. It's not trying to be the most economical bucky. It's literally a statement in its own. It's literally that. I mean, you look at something like a G-Class, a G-Wagon. That vehicle is not good on any level. I'm being dead serious. Think about it, right? It looks the part to me. I think it looks really nice. It sounds amazing. I'm talking about the AMG. But it has completely unusable power. I mean, it's so heavy on fuel. It's just not a... It's not a practical vehicle. But then again, it's not aimed at a market that's looking to be practical.
No.
You know? Again, it's a statement. Same thing with a V-Class.
Okay. But wait, the G-Wagon was actually for off-road, and it just became a statement symbol.
Exactly.
Now.
But, I mean, think about it, right? If you got a G63, there's no way you're taking a vehicle with however many inch, what's it, 21, 22-inch tires off-road. Yeah. You're not even going to drive on a gravel road. Think about your fleet manager, if they give you a G63, and you tell them, hey, listen, I'm doing a gravel road here in the Northern Cape. They're going to literally be like, I'm sorry, but the vehicle was actually written off yesterday and give you every excuse like in the book. When, like you say, that's the background to the vehicle. That's where it came from. Yeah. You know, it's like basically if Jeep came and made an SRT version of the Rubicon, it won't make sense at all, you know. But like I'm saying, there's a lot of vehicles that are kind of aimed at a specific market, a specific target audience, and you judge it based on that. You know, you don't compare a Rubicon to a Ranger. You don't do that. They're both Buckies, they both whatever, but they're just different. And
okay, with that said, let's just take an ad break, and after the break we will continue our discussion.
CII Radio, embracing Africa, one city at a time.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back to Bumper to Bumper. We were discussing, quite a lot of things.
Today is like a very serious episode.
Yes.
Why? It's the holidays, yeah. Why are we getting into like these?
So you were supposed to tell us your most memorable adventure in a vehicle.
Sure. To be honest with you, I'm not sure if it's the car guy in me, but like, you know, I've been like a car person like my whole life. So a lot of my memories are actually formulated around vehicles. So like my dad and I have this thing, like we'll talk about a holiday before we even talk about the destination. It's like, oh, the holiday with the Freelander. Oh, the holiday with the this, you know, it's like, for me, everything always revolved around a vehicle.
It's funny you say this before you continue. My son does the same thing. So we'll say, we went to this place, and then he'll say, what car we went in.
Yeah. No, like for real, that was always a thing. I remember like a trip to Durban in the Audi A3. I remember a trip to Durban in a Volvo. I think memorable trips was, I think we went to a place called Umtata, myself and my dad, in this bright yellow Toyota MR2. Do you know that car?
Yes. I remember that.
So it was quite a crazy one because obviously Umtata is like somewhat rural.
Yeah.
So, you know, you drive up to this like a rural area. You know, it's not a township. It's a rural area. And people would literally be screaming like, oh, Ferrari, and like, you know. It was a really nice experience. The vehicle also was pretty cool at the time. Are they like still in the market? Like, can you buy one?
I haven't seen one.
Like on
the
second hand market.
Years, actually.
I'd like to know what they're going for, like, you know.
Yeah.
What engines do they have? Do you remember?
I can't even remember. That was like 95, 96.
I can't remember what year it was. And then there was another vehicle related trip that I remembered quite clearly. I was actually talking to my dad about it recently. He had this burnt orange Freelander.
Okay.
And we
the
had
first Freelander.
I think two, right? Okay. And we had decided to do this like gravel route in, I think it was in Mpumalanga, Lydenburg, somewhere around there. And we were driving on this gravel road. If I tell you, out of nowhere, we hit this, like, you can't even call it a pothole. Like, there was just like a piece of the road missing. And I was actually speaking to someone on the phone while this happened. And the person was like, are you guys okay? Like, what happened? Like, you know. And that was quite a memorable moment. Basically, everything was fine. I don't know what happened, but it was pretty crazy. Then in terms of other trips and things, I used an Audi A3 sedan to do the Swartberg Pass, which is really weird because as we were going up, everyone who was coming down had like these big buckies and they're like, are you going to the top in that thing? Like, yeah, we'll be okay, hopefully, you know. And but like I'm saying, like a lot of my trips actually revolve around a vehicle. So we took a Suzuki Grand Vitara to Limpopo and, you know, we got stuck with it and it was just... Everything just revolved around vehicles. There was a time where we towed a caravan to Wombat. And have you ever stayed in a caravan?
No.
Okay, so it's not bad, right? It's really difficult to like park this thing, and then obviously you need a vehicle that can pull it, you know. And but yeah, it was like a nice experience. It was the first time I've ever stayed in a caravan. It was pretty cool.
I actually know a family that's going to a camping place in Sanin.
Okay.
So they've left today, mm-hmm. and they've got a caravan. So they've got not this new Everest, not the one before that. The one before that.
The India-looking one.
It looked like a patrol.
Yes, I
patrol. Know you know which one.
Yes, the so boxy
got,
one.
Yeah. So they've got that Everest and they're pulling a caravan.
Okay.
And they've got a full, you know, like with the tents and everything
yes.
attached to it. So they can have like a whole like a little house basically.
So you get like different types. The one is like what you're talking about, like an off-road caravan that it's actually a tent mounted into it. So it opens up into something. And then you get like the, you know, like that whole thing that you pull, like it's like a structure.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the one we actually stayed in. But I honestly want to try and get
RV.
RV.
I want an RV.
Really?
You know, you see them.
Yeah.
And then, like you just, I don't know what the attraction is. I just want to drive one and stay in one. I don't know. I just.
Listen, we need to get hold of Sunny Rentals, right? Because they do these off-road 4x4 campers. And I think we should review that.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I want an RV also.
We'll get you an RV. I don't know.
Do they have them in South Africa though? I've never seen anybody actually.
I'm sure you'll find one in Bloom or something. Seriously, I just feel like you'll find one in Bloom. Maybe like a converted ambulance or something.
I think it's something that we should actually look at. Like, what's the market here? Like, do people not do that?
Look, do people still like buy caravans and stuff? Because I know it's like more amongst the like older generation.
Well, when this family like showed me like they're going to
how old is this?
So they like about our age, a little bit older, I think.
Okay, it's unusual for someone our age to like own a caravan or even know about like caravan.
Okay, so like in their 40s maybe, like.
Okay.
So, but I mean, like that's what I'm saying. But they like grew up camping and stuff. But I was surprised because I was like, do people still have caravans? Because I haven't even seen, you hardly see trailers even. Remember the Venture trailers?
Yes. Fenter trailers, eh?
Fenter
trailers. Yeah, I remember those. Yeah. Town and Country, what is it? Am I right? Yeah. Now it's a Thule roof box, my friend.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you hardly see a trailer.
Yeah, that's very true, eh? And I wonder why. Like, okay, it's not the most practical. Have you ever driven with a trailer?
Yeah.
It's annoying.
Yeah.
Especially if you're not used to it, because the moment you need to reverse that trailer, it becomes a little...
But you see, that's why the Thule boxes and all those have become, you know, like a go-to.
Mm.
And also, I think the vehicles have somewhat... got a little bit more space, or people have cut down on what they need to take with.
No, and like, let's be honest, right? A lot of people have kind of, I won't say stopped camping, but I think it's like a lot more glamping, where you don't need to take so much of things with.
No, but also it's the convenience. Remember back in the day, there wasn't so many options, a fuel station, like every few kilometers. There weren't like stores everywhere. I mean, you can go into a small town now and there's something, even if it's a Boxer or a spa, or, you know, there's something there where you can buy groceries.
100%.
Whereas before, you had to literally take your house.
So I was really like into fishing, right? Yeah. And it's funny that you say that, because before, like, when we used to go with, like, my grandfather and, like, my uncles and stuff, we'd pack the vehicle the night before, right? So it's all your fishing stuff, all your food, wood, like, packets of wood. We'd take all of that with. And, like, I mean, now, tomorrow, if we had to leave, I'll tell you, hey, listen, we'll find a place on the way to get everything.
Exactly.
Like, we're not going to drive for... Like, if we go to, like, a place that's far, like, let's say we're going to the Vaal or, like, Bloemhof or something, it's a four-hour drive. We're not going to drive with 10 kilos of wood in the back of your baki. Like, I mean, we're going to get to a place there. At any filling station, they have charcoal, they have wood, they have ice. You get what I'm saying? We used to literally keep cooler boxes with ice, you know? So, yeah, I think maybe that's a reason why people don't need Fender trailers.
But
anymore.
even besides, you know, the, like, the filling station, like, if you drive, even, I think even in, like, the Drakensberg, you'll see these guys, they know that, you know, like,
yes,
it's the middle of winter, they're standing on the side of the road, they've got a whole lot of wood.
Yeah. And it's always nice to support, like, the locals and, you know, support their little businesses and stuff. It means a lot to them. And even if, you know, people don't understand this, and it kind of grates me when people start negotiating with these vendors. Like, I mean, you don't walk into, like, a store and do this, right? You go to a convenience store and pay a ridiculous price for your wood.
Yeah.
This guy is trying to make a living. He maybe sells, like, 10 bags a day.
Yeah.
Just give him what he's looking for. And, and I mean, at times you know that it's overpriced or whatever, but overpriced by how much? 10, 20 ranges? You know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Just give back sometimes.
Definitely. So on that note, let's take another ad break. And after the ad break, we will continue our discussion.
Sure.
CII Radio, embracing Africa, one city at a time. All thanks
to Allah. Assalamu alaikum and welcome back to Bumper to Bumper. And there's rather... I don't know, what was it? It was like an emotional...
It's a peculiar day.
Yeah, it was. Like, I mean, it was kind of ups and downs. Like, we were venting, and then we were talking about Fender trailers. And
it was an emotional,
I don't know what
roller
it was. Yeah, 100%. Really, like, it was just a different show. But, I mean, we enjoy it nonetheless. And, you know, if you are on holiday, we really hope that you're having a good time and just staying safe and just behaving all around. Just take it easy. I mean, you know, it's been a long year for everyone.
Yeah, and we want to hear you, not hear you, but we want you to hear us when you get back. And yeah, be safe.
And we've got, like, a lot of big things planned for next year, inshallah, for Bumper to Bumper. We don't want to throw out anything yet. It's all going to be big surprises, but it's exciting things. It's exciting times. You know, we'd like feedback, like, you know, what are listeners thinking of the show? How can we improve? Both myself and Ziad, we're somewhat very new to this. So, you know, if you do have any constructive criticism or whatever it is, like, please drop us a WhatsApp, find us on socials, CII B2B.
B2B CII.
B2B CII. It's so simple. I'm so sorry. But yeah, you know, we'd like some feedback, and let us know what you think of the show, what you'd like to hear more of, what you'd like to see more of, because I think something that has been in discussion for a while is to incorporate the visual element into the Bumper to Bumper radio show. And as you know, like, radio is now, like, kind of shifted or is shifting to a more visual podcast vibe. So if that's what you're looking for, if that's what you'd appreciate more, let us know.
Yeah, we'd love the feedback. But have a safe holiday. Remember the Ummah in your du'as. Remember us in your du'as. And stay safe. From us, the Bumper to Bumper team, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
From our headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa, to the rest of Africa, this is CII Radio Live.